Welcome one and all once again to Dual World in episode 73. We actually have a pretty news-filled show this week because apparently E3 is now a two-week event for Nintendo.
Yeah.
So we'll get to that when we cut to news.
The whole month of June instead of just the first E3. Week.
Yeah.
Their news launch window.
I mean, that's kind of what E3 has been, but I mean, traditionally, we're kind of accustomed to it being the leading up to E3, because a lot of third-party developers kind of have their news, you know, filtering in throughout, like, May and April, so that you don't kind of get ignored when that week comes. Here we're seeing the reverse of it, especially being that it's from a major first-party studio who are kind of using the week after or the time after to get news out. But again, we'll get to that when we get to news. Joining us this week, we have Daniel.
Hello.
And filling in for Chad, because apparently we need a Canadian on this show. We have Phil.
Hey, maple syrup.
Maple syrup and bacon. But yes,
Justin,
you know.
Bieber.
And Justin Bieber.
I think they do apologize for that one. So.
No, that was our gift to the world.
I always thought you also gave us Nickelback, so Canada.
I'm never going to Canada ever.
Canada is just a gift that keeps on giving.
That's right.
But yes, aside from making fun of Canada, we also have some other things signed up for this week. And we're going to kick it off as always with, you know, what we've been playing recently, because there's just been so many new games coming out these past few weeks. I'm sure we're just overwhelmed with it all. So, Dan, do you want to kick us off?
I've been playing League of Legends, but I've been playing that for the past month or so. I've been getting people who play that game are stupid, and I hate them, and they don't know how to play, unlike me, who know how to play. Other than that, I haven't played anything. I pre-ordered Torchlight 2 earlier. And, well, obviously that's not out yet. So
you can't be playing some of this. I mean, you could be, but you aren't. So, yeah, there's that. And also, while Daniel was trying to talk, I think Kevin's setting up to join us.
Hello, Daniel. I'm here.
Hi.
thanks for having me.
No problem. So we were just, Daniel was just telling us about what he's been saying, or apparently what he hasn't been saying since he's waiting for Torchlight. Or are you done with that?
I'm done with that. There's been nothing else.
Okay. What about you, Phil? What have you been playing?
Well, literally yesterday I just bought a new Asus laptop, and the Apollo 3. So I installed that last night, and then I fell asleep while I was installing, and I just started it up today. I played about, I don't know, 20 minutes of it now. So I don't have a good grasp on how I like the game, but it seems pretty okay so far. Other than that, I beat Binary Domain, which was
a
lot. You know what? It's a lot better than I expected it to be. I did not go into it with high hopes. But there's a lot of things that it does right, especially for a Japanese developer trying to westernize their game. It has a lot of depth, pretty good hit detection, sort of like Red Dead Redemption. You shoot the robots on different areas and different things will happen. And that it has a pretty good choice system, which is something that, you know, you don't see very often with Japanese developers. And you get to pick your party, and depending on who you pick, you know, different choices, different outcomes happen in the storyline. And, you know, a pretty in-depth upgrading tool where you can, you know, equip your I did not expect any of that from Binary Domain, so it was pretty good. There's a lot of weird choices. Like, I didn't use any of the voice stuff, but when you're making, like, your choice, when somebody's asking you something like, hey man, what do you think of that fight? And then the three choices are like, yeah, no, or damn it. And it's like, what? I don't
always
know.
Always go with damage.
What I'm supposed to here. But no, it was good fun. Some of the story stuff, yeah, I would go with damn it. Yeah, some of the story stuff is weird, but it was a fun game. And I got the newest Professor Layton that I don't have, so I can play in that. And I like Professor Layton. Pretty good.
I was about to say, that doesn't really narrow it down for people listening. I got the newest Professor Layton game that I have gotten. Which one is that?
It's The Last Spectre.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I assume there's not much to say about Professor Layton. I love the games, but they're pretty much all the same type of game.
They have some minor changes from game to game, but it's not revolutionary changes. They, like, add some elements, but, yeah, it's Professor Layton. If you like Professor Layton, then, you know, if you don't like Professor Layton, I should say it's not going to change your mind, but it's, yeah.
Yeah, I would actually love to be in a town that's set up like Professor Layton, because I imagine that it would get annoying really fast if everybody you stopped and spoke to ask you a riddle.
Yeah, yeah. And the things that happen in Professor Layton are so ridiculous. Like, it's I don't know what kind of game it's trying to be. Like, it's kind of trying to be grounded in reality, like the whole Scooby-Doo. Oh, this crazy thing is happening. Oh, wait, no, this is the reality behind what's happening. But then, ridiculous things are happening. Like, the town is a giant robot, or, like, you have a flying car, and then it's just like, hold on, like, I can't, and it's supposed to be a mystery game where you're supposed to sort of guess what's going to happen. And when, you know, you have no idea what the fiction is capable of, it's sort of hard to anticipate or guess, like, what's going to happen in this part of the mystery. So,
yeah, I mean, I basically just play for the puzzles and I like the characters. Not so much for the plot progression or anything fancy like that. But it's a fun series, and we'll kind of get to it in a bit with the news, because, you know, we have a new Professor in game coming
soon. Yeah. And, just to end it off, I'm playing Ninja Gaiden 3 as well. Which isn't that great.
No, you have to buy the Wii U to get the good version of that game.
Well, it does seem to be the case. I'm kind of curious to see how it reviews, though, because it sounds like they're making a lot of changes to it. So I guess for once, having an 8 port might come in handy for the Wii U launch. Even though
I don't know anybody who's going to buy a Wii U just for the version of Ninja Gaiden 3.
Wait. The Wii U, it's awesome in the concept of it, I heard rumors that the system is gonna cost like $400.
Wow.
I will just put this up here, and it's something. It's not in any show notes or anything, because this is one of the reasons why we personally don't deal with rumors on this show, is that in the last. Since E3, so about 3 weeks now, the Wii U price has been anywhere between $200 and $450 on any given day, on any given website. And it's one of the reasons I've always been against the fact. I don't mind why when retailers do it, because it's their thing. Retailers do it because they want people to pre-order it from them. And the way retailers work, especially something like Amazon, is that you put a price, like say, you're going to sell the Wii U. You put a price at like $500, not because you think it's going to be $500, but because you think it won't be more than $500.
It'll be less than that, yeah.
Like what happened this week, we saw with Amazon UK, is they priced like $200. That means if the Wii came in at $300, they'd lose $100 on every system they sold.
People went crazy over that price. They were pre-ordering like mad.
Yeah.
So, that's kind of why retailers do it. You put it higher, so that when it comes in, you can drop the price and lose no money. If you put it lower and it comes in higher, you end up losing money. So yes, this is why you tend to see much higher prices. And retailers can do it, but the fact that everybody seems to always run with it as a story, even though we are in the same thing with the 3DS and the Vita's launch, and even with games, because I mean, I think Amazon.com had a bunch of Wii U titles for $100. Obviously, that's not going to be the case.
Obviously not going to be the case for the price of the games.
So, yeah, I don't, I mean, I have my thoughts on what the Wii U price is going to be, and I'm sure other people do as well, and I'm sure people have their, you know, what they're going to pay for it, what they won't pay for it, but the fact is, no, I don't think anybody should use those prices to say, like, oh my gosh, the Wii U is going to be this price. I think it's going to be the same thing that happens next year with the other two systems. wait until it's official, or wait until, like, you know, like, Nintendo has given hints as to what to expect. It's going to be more than $250, but, you know, I don't expect it to surpass $400.
Yeah, I don't expect it either, but, yeah. You know, I've seen crazier things like the PlayStation 3 costing, like, $500, $600 when it first came out.
I'm not saying that there hasn't been crazy decisions, and I'm not saying that Nintendo isn't insane enough to try to price the Wii U at $500.
Oh, no, Nintendo are a bunch of nut jobs like Sony is.
But, yeah, it's one of those things where you can't expect, yeah, I wouldn't expect anything to come out of that. So, is that all you've been playing, Phil?
Yeah. That's what I've been playing recently.
Okay.
Those four games.
You want to know how out of date I am, or how far behind I am with gaming? The last current game I played are two games. Arkham City and NHL 11. Oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, that happens. I was going to say, the game I've been playing is actually from, like, 2009. I'm Shadow Complex because...
Oh, wow.
It's one of those things where I bought it, I think last Christmas they had, you know, Microsoft has their digital sale. I think it was, like, $5 or $6. And I picked it up because you can say no for $5 or $6. It just kind of sat there. I think I started it up and I lost interest in it after like 10 minutes. And I don't really know why. Because I picked it up again this week because I was like, I had my Xbox on. I didn't want to watch a movie. I'm like, it's much easier to do digital because all the games are just there instead of having to do discs. I'm like, oh, let me try this again. And, you know, I just kind of picked it up and I breezed through the game. It isn't that long of a game. It's about 5 hours. I think I beat an A5.
It's not 5 hours if you play it 10 times like I did.
It's not 5 hours if 10 times like he did. I mean, I say this now, but it's probably not going to happen. I'll probably try to go back through and get it, like, 100% for the items and stuff.
Do you have at least one Summer of Arcade game since the birth of Summer of Arcade? Like, every year?
I bought most of them, I think, I think it was the year before, when they had Monday Night Combat, when they had Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light, and when they had, the Castlevania Harmony of Dissonance.
Oh, yeah. Mm. I usually get at least one every year. Sometimes I get two.
I've done it before twice. I think that year I bought almost all of them, except for one. Because usually it's like if you buy three or four of them, you get like, you know, you get a free game or you get like 400 Microsoft points back or something like that. This year, nothing really grabs my attention, but we shall see. Because usually what happens is it comes out at a great time because there's nothing else really coming out on the system. So it gets all the attention, which is why Microsoft started it. And it's a great program. And we'll see in a few minutes how another company's trying to hone in on that with their 8-bit summer deals, but yeah, it's a interesting system. Going back to Shadow Complex, though, I think it was a terrific game. I fundamentally don't like the idea of shooting into the screen, I guess into the background.
Oh yeah,
that's,
I agree.
That's the only complaint I had about that game.
Yeah, it didn't work most of the time. I mean, it's not like it didn't work, but it's just really hard to aim. Because not only can you shoot into
sometimes
the background...
Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, because not only can you shoot into the background, but you can also kind of shoot up and down. So it's like the game's trying to fight between if you want to shoot horizontally, vertically, or across the plane. And like sometimes it isn't an issue if you get into a room and there's like two enemies. But you'll get into a room and there's enemies above you, there's enemies across from you, there's enemies in front of you. And your gun's just kind of aiming everywhere. People have their opinions. I think if you took Shadow Complex level design and stuff like that, and you kind of matched it with other M's gameplay, you just have a fantastic Metroid game in there somewhere. Because I think Metroid Other M has a much better combat system. And they're pretty much, because this is basically Metroid. But I shouldn't say basic. This is Metroid with a gun, really. And Nathan Drake as the main character. That's not a complaint necessarily, but it is so jarring to hear Nolan North play Nathan Drake in so many games at times. And it's not like he basically plays Nathan Drake in this game. He's that kind of, you know, like that free spirit character who just ends up in the wrong situation at the right time.
It's not his fault though. It's people demand him to play Like, for instance, when he did the Prince of Persia character, they literally said, hey, play Nathan Drake for this character.
Yeah, and I mean, it is, I mean, like I said, I mentioned this on Twitter when I was playing through the game. It's like, it seems to be the first video game voice actor who's getting typecast.
Yeah, yeah. Troy Baker now seems to be going along those lines, what with Bioshock Infinite and The Last of Us and Mass Effect 3 and all that. He's like the new Nolan North now, and he's being typecast into just like the same voice. So.
Yeah,
and this is it. It's not like Nolan North can't do other voices.
Oh, I know.
He just doesn't.
Yeah,
he did Penguin in Arkham City.
Yeah.
And that was not Nolan North. You probably couldn't tell it's Nolan North. But
and
yeah,
if you remember Ratchet and Clank, A Crack in Time, he's that little high-pitched robot thing, which is totally not like Nolan North. So.
Yeah, and I mean, if you, he also does, I don't know if any of you watch Young Justice, but he does Superboy and Superman on that show, and he doesn't play Nolan North because they're, you know, emotionally differently complex characters than Nathan Drake or...
Yeah.
I forget this guy. Is it James? Michael? Something like that, I don't know. This story wasn't really what kept me going in this game. Stuff just started blowing up at the end. I didn't even know it was the climax until I started shooting how to carry you, so. But yeah, it's a terrific game. It's, you know, it's a blast. It's probably better than some of the retail games I've played on this system this generation. And you can't really go wrong. I mean, you know, like, time's always an issue with games, but it's a digital game and it's like 10 or 15 bucks normally, so. Yeah, it's worth checking out if you haven't. I mean, the game's like 3 years old at this point, so I'm the one late to the party here. So yeah, it is that.
I didn't even show up to the party.
Oh, then it's there's no time like the present to jump in. I mean, this is huge. I mean, people always complain that there's not enough new games released, but I also think that the summer's a great time to catch up on your backlog.
Yeah, get up on the backlog.
I'm too busy this summer. I have to, like, make tons of reviews and have to do vlogs and stuff, get my website up and running.
Yeah.
In my case, summer's the time where you play one multiplayer game nonstop.
Yeah, I don't know if you know some people, summer's the time when you go out and hang out with friends at beaches and stuff. The weird people.
I haven't went to a taste of anything for, like, 5 years. Yeah. And I miss the vendors. They made such great greasy food that will stop your arteries.
Nice. So yeah, I think that's it for what we've been saying this week. Probably next week will be some of the games, just because.
Yeah.
So yeah. Now we head over to news, and like I said before, it's actually pretty eventful, and there's really no place to start other than with Nintendo and the Nintendo Direct. For two reasons. One is that it was a very eventful 53 minutes for the company, or hour and a half if you want to count the European and American shows. But also because it comes in the wake of what was, without mentioning words, was a piss-poor E3 for the company. And the fact is that they had so much they could have shared at E3, but they held it off for a random Thursday 2 weeks later. It shows, one, that they are an interesting company. They don't play by their own song or drum or whatever. But it also shows that I think it's something that a lot of people have mentioned before, not just this year, but the big three aren't as dependent on E3 as they have been in the past. And, I mean, part of it was shown this year with Nintendo, who had a Nintendo Direct, like, 2 days before the E3 press conference.
Mm-hmm.
And now they had one 2 weeks after the E3 press conference. And, like I said before, in this 53 minutes, this pre-recorded segment with Iwata, they showed more stuff that got people, at least I think on a wider level, they got showed and announced more stuff that got people excited than they did over their 2.5 press conferences at E3. And the big one, and the one that I'm sure most people are talking about, is that they announced the 3DS XL.
The funny thing was about this is everyone was like, see, I told you there'll be no 3DS redesign, and then 2 weeks later, what do we get?
Yeah.
I don't even call this a redesign.
Reggie Bill, it's another SKU, regardless.
But I don't necessarily think another SKU is a redesign, because it's just basically a bigger 3DS. It's not like... And this is the thing I don't get, because I've seen a lot of reactions to this you know, on the interweb, because that's what people do, is that this doesn't invalidate if you have a 3DS already. Like, I have a 3DS, and this doesn't do anything. It's like, oh my gosh, I missed out. Like, they didn't add anything to it that makes it radically different than the 3DS, other than it being bigger.
Yeah, and it looks kind of, it's more rounded, looks a bit nicer.
I actually think this looks hideous.
I don't like the look of it either.
Ugly fucking system.
It's like, they sort of had a size that they had to constrain to, and then they realised that they've got to put buttons in it after that. So they're just like, oh, let's just squash them in here.
Yeah, it just looks... I mean, when it shows, it looks like a purse with eyes. And when it's open, the buttons just... It just looks like... It's like they had a lot of screen... They had a lot of real estate on the device, so they just put things there without any type of aesthetic purposes.
Like, I mean, do like how the start, left, and home buttons are more prominent, though, because I don't it on the regular 3DS.
Yeah, I like that they're actual buttons now, but I prefer how it looks on the 3DS, because I think it looks better on the 3DS, but these look more functional than the 3DS, because those buttons are a pain in the ass. So yeah, they didn't, I mean, fundamentally, this is just basically a different SKU. It's basically the DSi XL, which is, I don't think people would consider a new SKU from the DSi. It's just a bigger version of it, or the Game Boy Micro. So yeah, I was actually surprised at the reaction that so many people had about that, and the fact that they didn't add a second analog stick to the device.
Here's something, right? What happens to those who say they sell their 3DS and they get in the 3DS XL? What do they do with their Kid Icarus stand and Circle Pad Pro if they've already got one?
I was actually, this Kid Icarus stand was the thing I was thinking of too, because I'm like, God, you're going to come out with an XL stand? Because, I mean, the Kid Icarus stand is just a funny little thing that came with Kid Icarus. It's not actually needed. It's just something that...
But a lot of people like to use it, so...
Yeah. So, and you don't, and like I said, you don't have to, there's no reason to buy the XL unless you want a bigger device. That's it. I mean, it's not like it's adding anything fundamentally different or changing anything. And I assume they're coming out with a Circle Pad Pro XL or something like that, so people can reinvest in that. But the thing is, and I said this when the Circle Pad Pro was announced, and I said it again when we saw the support for it, is that dual analog is not a priority for Nintendo. It hasn't been a priority for Nintendo for the better part of a decade now. I don't know why people expected them to add dual analog to this revision. It seems like it was just a hope that people were holding out to, but from every business and logical sense, they aren't going to add dual analog to the device. I say this now, and maybe next year they'll prove me wrong by having a dual analog supported 3DS I or whatever, but the fact of the matter is, from a business standpoint and from a consumer standpoint, it would piss off more people. Because there's 15 million people with 3DSs now who would have to either reinvest into a 3DS or buy a Circle Pad Pro because they would have options cut off them. Where, like, I said when the Circle Pad Pro was announced, is that it seems like a device that was created to... It seems like a device that was created to appease third parties, particularly Capcom with Monster Hunter Tri. And that's it, because the only Nintendo game that has it is Kid Icarus Uprising, which is made by Sakurai, who, as far as I know, for the past decade, doesn't have to do anything that Nintendo mandates. He just does his own thing, and they don't say no to him.
Yeah, that's right. It's absolutely insane.
So yeah, it's basically a bigger 3DS in a way for Nintendo to do a price hike on this system, because it's, at least for us, I think it's $30 more. For you folks overseas, it has no set price. It's an open market, right? Oh yeah, that, and it doesn't come with an AC adapter for whatever reason.
Well, it does in the US.
It comes in the US, but Japan and Europe don't get an AC adapter. I'm not really sure why.
Wait, people in the UK don't get an AC adapter with a 3DS?
Yeah.
That is crazy.
Yeah, I thought they said it wasn't coming with an AC adapter, but it was coming with a charge cradle, which I thought would have been fine.
Oh.
But I don't think it comes with anything.
Wow.
I'm not 100% sure. I'm not European, so I don't feel it off, but...
I'll have to report back when I get one.
You're getting one?
I don't know. I probably will.
Is this the revision you were waiting for? The giant screen?
No, but... I know. It's a revision. Somewhat. It's got a better battery life.
Yes, that's...
Yeah.
the Resident. It does have a better battery life. Not by much, but it has a better battery life. And I think, you know, like, you know, people say this about the 3DS and the Vita and stuff. At this point, I believe it's just the fact that the battery industry has been at a standstill for some time, because we haven't really had a major breakthrough in that industry in quite some time, and devices are just becoming more taxing, with batteries aren't becoming more efficient.
Very true.
Yeah, because even with, like, even with tablets or smartphones, like, you do videos and you do games, and that will drain your battery in no time yet. So yeah, it's the 3DS XL has a better battery life for the simple fact that it has a bigger battery. So there's that. The other major news that came out of the Nintendo Direct is the fact that Sakurai and Project Sora are starting work on a new Smash Brothers game in collaboration with Namco Bandai, who... Yeah, Namco Bandai. So, I don't have any feelings towards this news at all.
I know some... They need to do something crazy different with Smash Brothers, because I felt some massive fatigue when I was playing Brawl, and I'm not too ready for just another one of those games.
See, and this is good. This is going to be an issue, I think, and this is always an issue with major franchises. Is this the same thing that happens? Like, Brawl kind of gets beat up on because it changes too much from Melee, and then it's like, if you change too much from what people want, people complain, but if you keep it too much the same, people complain. And you have to find that middle ground where you add stuff to it without taking away anything that people necessarily want to enjoy. And it's always difficult because everybody has different expectations of what they do and do not enjoy. Like, I know a lot of people hate the Subspace Emissary from Brawl, and that was one of my favorite parts of the game. So I could see them trying something different with that.
Different strokes, baby.
I'm more excited for the PlayStation one, to be honest with you, just because of the fact that it's going to be a whole new, you know, cast of characters that you wouldn't expect to be in, like, a Smash Brothers format.
But it's basically the same game.
Yeah, I know. It's a knockoff. It's a knockoff, definitely. But it's just, I like that formula to be in a place. I'm more interested now in that formula to be in the PlayStation universe, because I've done it three times in a Nintendo universe. So.
Yeah, and that's a fair criticism. This will be the fourth and fifth time since they are doing a Wii U and a 3DS version. But at the same time, you also have to realize that this will be the fourth game in 14 years? So, I mean, it's a formula that is around, but it's also not one that's been beaten to death, yeah, like some of their other games. Like, Mario Kart kind of is in that point now where we're seven games in, even though it's been over 20 years. It is kind of, and even, I think Mario Kart also gets that bum reputation because they do add stuff, and then people don't like it. Like, nobody likes, I love the Double Dash format, but a lot of people didn't, which is why
I don't like Double Dash.
Yeah, you're on your own on that one.
See, and that's exactly my thing. It's like, you change stuff, and people don't want it, so you kind of go back to what people want, and then people are like, we didn't want that either. So it's, you always have to find something, I mean, you have to find something
new. Some cool stuff with the 3DS one, like, they sort of combine some Diddy Kong Racing traits.
Yeah, but I mean, some of that, I think, is because it's so situational, like, you can't activate the submarine anytime you want. So it's kind of one of those things. I like the trick system for Mario Kart Wii, but and the bikes, which, you know, aren't in the 7. So, you know, it's always going to be about balance and finding the stuff that people really, really need and finding the stuff that you want to try that will get people there. So,
who can you really add at this point for the new Smash Brothers, though? Like, they went pretty crazy into the backlog for Brawl.
There are a ton of characters they can still add. I mean, I assume since Namco Bandai's working on it, we'll probably be see Pac-Man or somebody of equal stature.
Pac-Man, Miss Pac-Man.
From this generation,
Doug.
From this generation, I expect we'll probably see Garham from Skyward Sword.
Oh, yeah.
I could possibly see Rosaline from Galaxy. If they want to dip into this generation, they have Captain Rainbow, they have Shulk from Xenoblade, or anybody from the Xenoblade Chronicles.
Yeah, I would love it if Rosalina was in it. That'd be awesome.
They could still do Miis. I don't know how that would work, but I think it's an idea they can approach. And, there are worlds and stuff they haven't done yet. And I hope, since we have Namco working on this, they can finally give Ganon a properly working sword. So, and, I mean, part of it is also the stages and music, and we've got to add to this as well. In addition to these two major announcements with Namco working on Smash Bros. And 3DS XL, they also announced a ton of games for the 3DS. Honestly, I think the 3DS is set as far as games go for the rest of the year in all major territories. Like, sure, there aren't games. You know, like, Japan has the most games. Nintendo of Europe seems to do a better job of localization than Nintendo of America does. But, I mean, the device seems to be healthy. Kingdom Hearts is out in a month, and that we got a demo of that if you're in the States. I think Europe got the Rhythm Final Fantasy demo. The digital sales going on right now. You can get, Japan and Europe are doing 20% off sales every week, about 5 or 6 games. Nintendo of America right now seems like they're doing a weekend sale for one title. So we got Super Mario Land this week for $3 on the eShop, and by the time this podcast goes up, that sale is done anyhow. But I don't know if it's a weekly sale, if it's just a one-off thing or whatever. I mentioned before that Microsoft has Summer of Arcade, so Nintendo is doing what they call 8-bit Summer, which is their recent. I don't know why this is major. This should be something they should strive to do the entire year. But they're doing 2 virtual console games on the 3DS every week through July. Games include Zelda for the Nintendo, Kirby's Pinball Land, The Sword of Hope 2, Kid Icarus, Monsters and Mayhem, or Mazes, or something like that. Tumble Pop, Sonic Dash, Sonic Labyrinth, and Super Mario Land 3 Wario Land.
Yeah, they really need to be doing that, like, on a consistent basis.
I don't necessarily mind them doing one virtual console game a week. If it's one virtual console game and one eShop title, that makes sense. But sometimes it's just, like, one virtual console title and nothing else. Because Microsoft does the same thing. Microsoft doesn't release a lot of titles all at once. It's usually like 1 or 2 titles every week on Xbox Live Arcade, but they do it consistently and you kind of know what to expect and it's built up over years, where I think a lot of people are just kind of like, you know what, you're just emulating old games, you should just kind of get them all out there.
Yeah.
ASAP. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but at the same time, you do kind of want to have that show roll out. You do want to have a rollout so that you have consistent games. The problem is, they don't have consistency because I don't think we had a virtual console game on the Game Boy on the 3DS for some time now.
And it's not like there aren't people to work with. I mean, they've got Sega, they've got SNK, they've got themselves, they have their own games.
And again, I don't think it's necessary that they don't have the games. I just think it's them not always having their. They at times, I think they need to. They need to compartmentalize their fails because sometimes I feel like it's just like Nintendo. It's not like they don't have like a Nintendo eShop where they just kind of focus on like, okay, like here's the eShop games we have coming up. Here's the virtual console games we have coming up. How do we kind of leverage this so we have a consistent flow of quality content? How do we kind of get advertisement rolling? Because I hear a lot of times, I don't know if it's the same thing with 3DS, but like I know for Wii and stuff, like a lot of developers would say, like, we have no idea when our games are coming out. We send it to Nintendo. It's been approved. And they just kind of tell us, like, 2 weeks ahead that our game's coming out instead of saying, like, oh, your game's coming out, like, October 16th. You can prepare your marketing materials for that. So, yeah, it's, you know, the Nintendo and online, it's like your grandmother. You want to work with them. You want to make sure they understand it. But they still do make some frustrating decisions that you just don't understand. You explained it like 10 times already. There was also a ton of other stuff. We had new Animal Crossing footage. It's Animal Crossing. I still don't get the love for that franchise, but a new Bravely Default Flying Fairy trailer, which looks phenomenal. More
DLC.
DLC for New Super Mario Bros. 2, which Reggie made sure he announced and said was brand new content that hasn't been created, that won't be created until the game's out and skipped until. They went so far as to say, and this is probably one of the few times it works in Nintendo's favor, they went as far as to say they have no idea when it's even coming out because they haven't started work on it. And that's kind of what you want from DLC in a way. You kind of want, it's like, you know, like, it's not something cut from this game. It's not like we didn't finish working on this game, and then we, it's like, yeah, we're going to ship this out in August, and then we'll see what we're going to do about DLC. The other thing I want to say is that it's on paper it sounds like they're doing it okay, because right now it's not content from Mario Kart, but it's also not content that's for the core Mario game. It's like a side mode in the game. So if you want to continue doing that, the Coin Rush mode, it's like they just created just for that mode. So it's like, you know, like it's a side DLC if you really want to continue doing that stuff.
And I can't believe that people are complaining about this. Like, you want Nintendo to grow up with their digital... Nintendo to offer digital distribution on par with Microsoft and Sony, but not if they do this, but not if they do that. So what do you want?
It's a very interesting... Nintendo is in a very interesting spot. And, I mean, part of it is that most of it, they kind of have themselves to blame. But, yeah, they are walking a sign where I've seen, like, almost everything. It's like... Nintendo is either too far behind in Microsoft and Sony, or if they're playing catch up, like welcome to like 2005, 2006.
Or they people just don't want what they're doing, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah, and it doesn't sound like they've done it with Fire Emblem, and it's not like Nintendo hasn't done DLC, they just haven't really done paid DLC. Like, they've announced it for Professor in and the Spectre of Life or whatever the new one's called. Where granted, this is basically what Capcom does without charging you, is they have missions on the game that they unlock one a week for like a year. So there's like 52 additional puzzles, and they do that once a week for a year or so. And they've done that with the old Professor Layton games, and they've done that with Mario Kart Wii as well, where you kind of had those mission modes they gave you like every week, and it would just kind of remix elements already on the game disc.
Yeah, that's true. And I believe across 3D as well, maybe?
Yeah, across 3D as well. So, again, it's not something they haven't examined. It's just that it's new for them as far as paid DLC goes. It's not even... It's starting here in Europe and in the States with Mario and Mario 2, but it's actually something they've done already in Japan with Fire Emblem Awakening, where they've had like DLC content where you can get additional characters and story missions after the game was finished and came out and stuff like that. I've said it before, I'm not a huge fan of DLC, but I've always supported games that done it well, like Borderlands does it well, Valve does a terrific job with their DLC program. Mass Effect 2 did a decent job with it as well.
Yeah.
I just don't pay for like map packs and stuff like that, because... Especially in the case of something like Halo Reach, where like, they pretty much give you new maps all the time anyhow for free. Even if they have like, pretty much the same meta aesthetics, they do give you free maps. Like you'll go on Halo Reach every week and they'll have like, here's three new maps in these modes. And I'm like, okay, I'm good with this. Why am I paying you $10?
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, stuff like that. It's like if it's either like it's a Capcom who's like, oh, we have game content, we're just gonna knock out from you until we can charge it for you, or in the case of a lot of companies where they announce it ahead of time, so it just sounds like you're just not gonna finish this game, you're gonna sell us an ending after the fact. So I just want them to screw up I want them to screw up before I start punishing them for it. And I think that's a problem a lot of people aren't. They don't give companies, it's like you'd rather assume they're all evil, money-hungry people. Mm-hmm. Which in some cases might be true, looking at you, EA, but it's not true for everybody. Is there anything else you folks want to talk about as far as the Nintendo Direct stuff goes?
No, not particularly.
No, I still have to watch it, because I haven't seen any of it yet. I sort of get the gist of what happened now. But I'm still going to watch it.
Well, the real gist of it is that Nintendo said F you to E3 this year.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
especially in terms of the fact that they showed, even some of the games they showed at E3, like New Super Mario Bros. 2, they showed more of and explained better in this little Nintendo Direct package than they did when they had it over two shows at E3. They showed Animal Crossing, which is a 3DS game everybody wants to see at E3. They showed a lot of new, like I said, I think this is what the Japanese were doing during E3. They were like, oh, give Nintendo footage for Nintendo Direct. because we've had games from Capcom, Namco, Square, all of these major third-party Japanese companies that were on E3 in any real shape or form. And just real quickly, so we can move on from Nintendo, is that it also came out this week that the Miiverse won't connect to social networking sites, so you can't connect it to your Facebook and your Twitter. And
I'm not surprised, because this is Nintendo and they want to keep it things under their control for the most part, and yeah. I get that. And to be honest, I'm not really bothered. The last thing I want is people spamming their Miiverse stuff on my Twitter account. If I want to see it, I'll have a Miiverse account and I'll see it there.
That's my personal stance on it as well, because I hate when, and this I'm sure this happens to you as well, it's like when people's feed is nothing but their Raptor account.
Yeah.
Tweeting me when they get achievements or what they've been, and they ask me, I don't care. I don't want to see this, but yeah Raptor, people's GetGear accounts, people's Foursquare account, I don't, you know, like, all this stuff where you check in is automatically tweeting for you, or Facebook.
And in some cases, it is just one thing that, like, winds me up, like when Sword and Sorcery came out on the iPhone, everybody was playing that and tweeting everything at every opportunity. Just because you have the ability to tweet it doesn't mean you have to tweet it.
Yeah. And that's kind of my thing. It's like, I have a Raptor account, I have a Foursquare account, I have a GetGear account, I have all the, but I make sure they don't tweet or Facebook, because if I wanted to tell you what I was watching or what I was doing, I would tell you what I was watching or what I was doing. I don't need a program to tell you for
me. And not only that, is I'm watching this doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so-and-so just checked into the Avengers this weekend, like, thank you. They earned the sticker, thank you again.
If it's a multiplayer game, then fine, because you can say, look, I'm playing this game, anyone wants to play, come. But TV is just not. And Miiverse is just people going to. It's going to be people swapping silly pictures for the most part. So.
And the other thing is, and this is, you know, again, kind of. It's like if. And I don't think that. I hope this isn't their intentions, because then it's going to fall flat on its face. But if their hopes, their ambition is to kind of have like a social networking site on the level of Facebook or Twitter, that's not going to happen in the context of just being a pure video game thing. But at the same time, if you do social, like, you know, like, at first, I'm assuming Facebook didn't have a way to connect your MySpace account when it first opened up. And I'm sure Twitter didn't have a way to connect your Facebook account when it first opened up. Because you kind of want to build your own social network aside from the popular one at the moment. Because then what's the point of using yours if you can just use the popular one at the moment? Like, I can go on Facebook or Twitter right now and ask you for help in video games. And people do that.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a big deal, but I think it's one of those things that people are going to beat up Nintendo about, because it's another sign of Nintendo not forward thinking, because, you know, like with Microsoft and Sony's social networking sites and stuff like that, that you can use Twitter and Facebook. But that's
whatever. And it's the same thing with, like, achievement trophies. They're not conforming to that either. They're sort of saying, like, yeah, we'll have an achievement system, but we're not going to enforce it.
And I'm all for that, because I thought, you know, achievements should be more than just, like, showing and apparently Microsoft does as well after 7 years.
Yeah, because when achievements first came out, I was all over that, and I used to be, like, an achievement hunter, but now, like, I can care less. Only, like, the games that I'm very, very passionate about in, like, completion, I would go for the trophies or whatever, but, like, some of my favorite games are like the Mario Galaxy 2, so I really hope that Nintendo does do achievements from like some of their first-party games. That'd be kind of cool.
I do think, I mean, I understand why people complain about it, but it's one of those things where, it's always good to give people options, but there are people who are against it, and there's people who love them, so it is that. But yeah, after, I think, 7 years of having achievements and all this other stuff, Microsoft is finally going to reward you for unlocking achievements and stuff.
That time.
I've always thought this was one of, I mean, like, they have a system somewhat where you can unlock achievements that unlock avatar awards and stuff like that, but, you know, I've always thought it was something that should have been expanded further.
And considering the achievements have a direct number value associated with them, you know, you could have easily. I just can't believe. But also, what they've got to do when this gets implemented is they've got to think about people who just buy games for achievements, because there are people out there You know, and that's going to be heavy abuse of the system. And it's, if nothing else, if they say, oh, if they just have a mathematical equation which translates your gaming score into MSP, then it's just going to encourage loads of people to start doing this, and obviously
it boosts achievements. Yeah, and it's so easy to do so. There are websites out there that you just be like, hey, I need you to help boost achievements, and then boom, like just like that, you can have like six people helping you out getting 100% on a game.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Yes, I'm tackling this in a bit because you did bring up several interesting things. It's like, one, it's like, how is it going to work? Is it going to be based on achievements, or is it based, like, for every 1,000 achievement points, do you get, like, 100 Microsoft points in return or something like that? Two, is it backwards compatible? Because there are people who have high thousands in
the Well, there are people out there with, 700, 800,000 achievement points.
I didn't even know there was enough Xbox games to get that. I'm being serious. I mean, if you assume that's 1,000 per game.
Well, hang on, let me look up the top player on True Achievements. How about that?
Okay, because I think 700 and 800,000 just seems insane. Like 7,000 I would get. 80,000 I can get.
So the highest amount of gamer score on TrueAchievements.com is 734,770.
Sweet Jeeves. That is insane. That is, what is that, 730 games?
Yeah, 735 games, because he's got... He's made between the thousands, so yeah.
Wow.
Okay, that's a lot of games. Two, where do you find the time for it at?
Yeah.
And his achievement completion percentage is 84.35%. So there's still a lot of them that he could get with the games that he owns already without buying any more.
I don't get it. I couldn't name 730 great Xbox games. I couldn't name 100.
I couldn't name 730 games anyway.
No, I mean, like, this is a true achievement haul. Like, you have scraped the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, so he has 30,818 achievements in 1,118 games.
I see, Jeepers.
Oh,
so he has if every one of those games is a retail game, right? He has upwards of 1 million gamer score right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's insane.
We are dealing with someone who has no life. Oh, God.
Yeah, and again, I'm curious as to how he found the time. Like, 7 years is a long time, but...
Well, yeah, he has to live with his parents.
There you go, his aim, his goal, his whole goal in life, as signified by his... little speech thing on Xbox is 1,000,000gamerscore.com. So that sums it up.
Mother, more Hot Pockets.
Even then, that wouldn't make sense. If it's been 7 years, I mean, I guess he was like 10 when he started this. He should be, high school.
Maybe he just has more money than sense.
At this point, it's either he neglected school for a long time, or he's, like, an adult with way too much time on his hand.
I mean,
his parents could just support him, and he just doesn't go to school, do anything, and his parents are cool with that, so he just plays video games.
Why couldn't I find those parents?
Your parents love you too much to not spend money on 735 games.
So they implement this reward system, he's automatically minted.
Yeah, do you go back and like give him okay, we'll talk about this more when they actually release details, but for now I think there's a lot of questions.
It'd be great if it was retroactive, because that means that I get some sort of free stuff and I don't even touch my Xbox anymore.
Well, I mean, to be fair, we also don't know if they necessarily are going to be like Microsoft points. It could just be like you unlock certain special Xbox avatar chosen.
Yeah, it'll probably just be avatar stuff for the most part.
Yeah, maybe they'll do it per game as well. Like, you've reached so many achievements in Halo, you can get these map packs for half off or free or something like that. Who knows?
That would be cool, actually. That would actually encourage me to buy Halo 4, because I have the majority of the achievements in all the Halo games. So
if they do it well, it's a way to breathe life into achievements again, and it's also a way to kind of promote stuff without, you know, actually promoting stuff. But that is in the future when they detail it more, because it's not coming. It's not actually coming out into the fall of this year. Speaking of release dates, we finally have one for Mass Effect 3 Extended Edition, which is out this Tuesday, June 26th. And I'm super excited for this because I cannot wait for this debate to be reopened and people to talk about how people are entitled and how they got an end and they still don't.
This is just inviting hubris from both ends of the spectrum, which is people are probably going to complain that BioWare didn't completely change the engine, or I'm still not happy BioWare, and then there's going to be people saying, oh, you're just entitled, you shouldn't have got this anyway, and you're still complaining about it. It just really irritates me. Like, I think the thing that irritates me more now is the people who are saying, oh, you're just not going to be a happy ever, or you're entitled, this ending shouldn't exist, because although the people who weren't happy made a big noise about it, it seems like the noise generated by the other group is just stretched out over time.
Yeah, and I'm excited for it too, just because out of all the gamer rage and gamer controversy that has happened in the last 5 years, this, like the Mass Effect 3 thing, has been like my favorite just to observe, and all the theories that are coming out of it. Because of all that, I don't really hate the ending. Like, I understand everybody's points. Like,
it was disappointing.
Big fuck you to, all the choices. And I get it. And I agree with that. But it took, like, there's something about it that just took me aback. And then everything that's surrounding it that just made me not really resent that ending as much as I should have. But, I'm excited to have this reopened again.
I've enjoyed the debate just because I think it's kind of opened up and shown both sides of the industry, where I think it's nice to see that consumers haven't kind of settled into that role where they're just kind of subordinate to the industry, where it's like, you know, the industry throws out whatever and we'll just kind of accept it on its face. But it's also kind of revealed how the media side works as well, because a lot of them were trying more to protect EA than they were to kind of, like, technically they're not supposed to have a side on the consumer or on the game, the company side. It's supposed to be neutral. Like, you're supposed to kind of be the observer who presents both sides of the argument, instead of like, oh, you know what, I think these gamers are entitled and bratty and whiny and stuff like that. And it's kind of, I mean, I've been sour on the game industry for quite some time now, but I think this industry, this particular issue has really shined light on how.
And this issue particularly is a very good example of, so there was a quote by George Orwell, and I don't know if you've heard of it before. It's, journalism is printing what someone else does not want to be printed. Everything else is public relations. And this is a very good example of that, where we had people like, was it Colin Moriarty from IGN just saying, oh, you should be glad you're not paying $60. You're not paying more than $60 for this. I can't believe you're just asking this of EA and shit. The sheer defense that came out with the whole day one DLC and the ending thing of the industry from the so-called journalists. Oh, wait. Oh, no, they're not journalists. They're bloggers. I'm sorry. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's the same thing. I think, one of the things I've been turned off for a while, but it seems like every time I turn around, it happens more and more, is with The Verge and like Arthur Giles and Justin McElroy.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen his whole thing with Gaff this week.
I actually have something very interesting to say about this, but you can finish.
Okay. But yeah, it was, I guess what happened was, the Xbox document that leaked that last week, the 720 document from like 2 years ago or whatever. I think Phil Collier from Giant Bomb asked if anybody actually vetted the source before printing it, and then the guy got upset. He's like, you know, Gaff has tried to fool the gaming industry before, and then like, it was this whole thing where like, Gaff shouldn't be the one doing your job. It's, you know, like, just because something's posted on a forum doesn't mean that a website should run with it without checking their sources. Because, again, a video game forum doesn't necessarily have sources to check this information against before running it. And it was this huge thing where he just kind of got into this hissy fit with them. And
it sounds like that people like to hate Gaff just for the sake of hating Gaff. I mean, I know there are some incredibly stupid people on that website, but it seems like it's all really unnecessary a lot of the time.
I think what happened is, I think what happened, especially in the case of Gaff, is that since Gaff is such, it's probably the biggest collective of gaming opinions in one place, a lot of people just kind of harp on it because it's so big and it's so many gamers. Because there is no one, there's no one uniform Gaff voice, which is always the problem. It's like everybody assumes that Gaff is one entity with one voice, when if you visit there, you know that they can't agree on anything. So to say like they have this agenda against the media just seems short-sighted and like paranoid. And again, it's not your job as a professional to be concerned with what people are trying to do. Your job is to make sure you filter out the content anyhow, so that you don't get tricked.
But like I just said, they're not. They like to think of themselves as not journalists, and it's just absolutely ridiculous when they. That's exactly what they are. Whether they write for a newspaper or whether they write for a website in a blog format, it doesn't matter. The whole goal is the same. And to say, "Oh, I'm not a journalist," is, you know, it just gives them a free pass, or what they seem to think is a free pass on, oh, I've just put this here for views.
Yeah, and this is a problem I've had, and it's, you know, we'll kind of move on, because I don't want to harp on it too much, and there are some other stuff we have to get through.
Hold on a minute. What I was about to say, this whole Mass Effect 3 thing about how the ending and stuff, it really is such a shame, because I'll tell you why. Okay, you have so many people working on this game for, like, I don't know, 3 years for development, for writing the story and all that stuff, and then when you release it, you think, yeah, it's good enough, and I mean, like, and then the freaking people freaking say the freaking ending is such crap, but then you listen to the reviews, and then you say, oh, okay, we'll just like change it and stuff. That is a cop out. That is a supreme cop out. It just freaking ruins your legitimacy and ruins the original artistic vision of it.
We've had this debate on the show before, and I'm going to say, I know Daniel and I disagree with that, because as much as people want it to be considered an artistic medium, and that is up, you know, that's up to history to determine that, really. It's never going to be the standard in our generation.
I get it. It's a business. I get it. It's a business first.
But it's not just a business, though. It's a consumer-driven business. It's a business in which you have to keep your consumers happy, because it's not, like, you can keep creating games without people buying it. You have to make sure you have an audience, and the way to do that is to make sure they're happy with your content output and they're happy with what you're doing with it. And if you do get a lot of negative feedback, it's up to you to see what is relevant and what isn't. I mean, it's no different than any game company who decides to patch a game because either the controls are broken or people mention that certain weapons are overpowered or characters are, you know, are nerfed or whatever. And it's no different than that, because you want to have that balance. You want to make sure as many people are happy as possible. By adding to this ending, not changing it, because you can still have the original Mass Effect 3 ending if you choose.
They're not changing their artistic vision at all. Yeah. They're just,
They are giving people the options to see a possibility that may make them happier, and they are, even if it doesn't make people happy, the fact that they gave them that option is still very important. It's, you know, if they had said that, you know what, we're not gonna, you know, you take what we give you and you'll be happy with it and call it a day, that may have soured future releases from them.
Not to mention it's easy to say, oh, that was the artistic vision, this was the artistic vision, it should stay that way, but the ending for Mass Effect 3, and I've seen it all, is, if anything, the antithesis to Mass Effect, which is, you know, pretty much a choose-your-own-adventure book. And if you're going to funnel everybody into the same thing, that's not what a choose-your-own-adventure book does.
So,
particularly to the extent that Mass Effect has taken, where characters can die at numerous points, and you know, you could be in a relationship with your character 1 minute and then not the next, and you know, and so I just think that I think all the complaints are legitimate because of the whole artistic vision of the game design and the story design before that.
And again, I just to kind of close the book on this, because like I said, we've had this discussion when it first opened up, and I'm sure we're going to have this discussion again next week when the DLC is actually out and people get to explore it. But the fact is, I don't think it's ever wrong for people to complain. I don't think it's ever wrong for people to want more or to want something improved. It's again up to the company to see what they do with that feedback, because you're never going to appease everybody. So, you can't, you know, like, if you get, like, one or two complaints here or there, and when I say one or two, I don't mean, like, one, I mean, like, you know, just a handful. And, you know, like, it's one or two things that doesn't really seem like it would change the game. That's different. But when you have, like, a vocal, and it might be a vocal minority, again, it might just be a handful of people who've played Mass Effect 3.
I mean, and you really have to admire that, too, with this medium, because, like, you know, even if gamers sometimes, you know, don't know what they want, they say this thing, and then this happens, and then all of a sudden they don't want it anymore. But this medium really gives the consumers a voice, and the consumers are part of the media more so than other sort of mediums in the media
like
industry.
Movies.
Yeah, like movies, like music, and the consumers really do have like a say of what goes on in this industry.
Well, I was gonna bring that up because I'm kind of curious to see like what people would, because I know for example Prometheus is getting a director's cut this year. So are people like, do people like in that case, is the artistic vision the one the director comes out with at the end of the year, or is it one, the one that came out in the theaters a couple of weeks ago, and who do you blame for that? But that is neither here nor there, because I haven't actually seen Prometheus yet, so
I would love to talk about Prometheus, but again,
word came out this, and I think we mentioned this last week, that THQ is going to make some hard decisions, and a lot of their decisions probably won't be popular with the masses, but it came out this week that Enter the Dominatrix has been canned, and it's, well, not canned, the DLC itself has been canceled, and they're folding it into a full-fledged Saints Row sequel, and under most circumstances, I'd be pissed.
So long as THQ doesn't die in the meantime, I'm alright.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I knew THQ was going to have to make some difficult decisions, and in the long run, it probably makes more sense to get a retail game out than it is to do DLC, because you can always get a bigger audience with a new retail title. Like Daniel says, if they make it to that time. If anything, I assume they'll work on it, and if THQ dissolves, somebody will buy up the IP.
But that's the last thing that I could have wanted.
Yeah. It's going to be EA.
What happens if
EA?
Yeah. Because they could just go, oh, right, now we've got our GTA competitor to go with our 10 Call of Duty competitors.
Yeah. I was going to ask, though, I don't know. I haven't really followed this much, but does anybody know, was Enter the Dominatrix covered under the Saints Row Seasons Pass?
No, it wasn't.
Okay.
The Season Pass was just the three bigger DLCs that were crap.
So, that's not a big deal, because I was going to say, how are you going to handle that, but... not that it's a crappy game, but I don't necessarily know if it's a game people want. Okami HD port was announced for the PS3 this week. It's a good game from what I hear. I couldn't get into it personally, but people enjoy it.
Yeah, it's a good game. I played it for the Wii, not the PS2, but I really enjoyed Okami.
I was going to say, though, it was originally released on the PS2, then it was ported over to the Wii this generation. And now
we had Okami done on the DS.
And that, now we have Okami on the PS3. And I just wanted to point out the fact that the PS2 was the most popular console of its generation. The Wii is the most, well, I don't, popular, the most, the best-selling console of this generation. And the DS is the most popular handheld of this of the past decade. And the fact that that game has not sold on a user base combined to be like 300 million tells me that an HD port really isn't what people were begging for. But
but there's a lot of the Japanophiles in the West have PS3s that could be interested in it.
Yeah, but again,
I can't see the sales figures being amazing. Oh, I suppose, yeah.
And that's, if it was just Nintendo stuff, I could see, but it was on the PS2, and it wasn't like an 8th gen thing, it was like 2000, well, I guess it was, it's 2006, so it was right after the PS3 came out, but again, you're looking at an install base of like 100 plus at the time. It came out on the Wii in like 2009, and then again, you had an install base of like 60 million. The DS version came out when it had an install base of like 120 million. The PS3...
Isn't it going to be digital only this time?
I think it's both. I believe there's also, I don't know if it's in the States, but I believe Japan's getting a physical copy as well.
And hey, those of you who have a PlayStation Move and haven't played Okami, you get a decent use of it.
Yeah, you can, even though I hated the motion controls in the Wii version. And not because it was bad motion controls, but the game has a rhythmic-based combat system.
Oh, right.
So it's more timing, and it's really odd to do with the motion controls. So yeah, it is that.
It looks
so
beautiful, though. It looks really good.
It's a fantastic.
And if people who haven't played Okami, I think that, you know, playing it in HD would be a great first time for them.
Yes, of the people who somehow haven't.
Yes,
haven't had the option, because I was thinking, find a Wii version, the PS2 version, for fairly cheap as well, but there you go. And finally, talking about Japan and some positive news from Camp Sony, the PlayStation Vita sales have improved drastically with the release of Persona 4 in Japan. It nearly tripled its weekly sales.
Does that mean that three people bought it?
Three people. it was actually over 35,000 people, which is not, if I'm not mistaken, it probably would be better than the last 4 or 5 weeks of Vita sales combined. So that's good for them.
And
I
it's
mean,
money in the bank that Atlas could do with as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. That, you know what, I more than seeing the Vita success, I'm more happy for Atlas, because I really do root for those guys.
So yeah, I mean it's a good story for Sony, and I mean it shows what everybody's been saying for the past 6 months is that the Vita needs game. It can be a wonderful device, but without games, it's really just going to sit there. The problem is, of course, the Vita lineup in Japan and the Vita lineup here as well probably doesn't have much else after Persona 4 this summer.
It's called Call of Duty. Call of Duty's coming.
I forgot to put that in the show notes, but we actually did find our first details about Call of Duty Declassified this week. And it actually sounds like Activision might be doing this right. From the sounds of it, it sounds like it's going to be a Call of Duty spinoff. Well, it is a Call of Duty spinoff. And it seems to be focused on, like, Spec Ops missions that are combined to do, like, a campaign, which I think makes sense because I think...
It plays to the whole
handheld market where it's like, you know, you don't get these extended missions. You get, like, five
and
or
you get a different flavor of the same sort of thing.
Yeah. And if, you know, they can have leaderboards, they can have, you know, top scores and stuff like that, so it gives people a reason to play it. So it sounds like that's a good thing. And especially if it's kind of like a companion piece to Black Ops 2, where like maybe it's the same, maybe it's like similar settings or scenarios, just kind of, more compact and...
Yeah.
So yeah, I think, you know, these are first details, of course, so maybe there's more to it. But right now, it sounds like Activision's getting it right. I don't necessarily know if this is what... I mean, because, you know, the rule of thumb is that nobody buys Call of Duty for the single-player stuff, which may or may not be true, but I'm curious to see what happens with this, and especially what happens with online, especially if it integrates with your PS3 version. So yeah, I mean, it has Call of Duty and it has Assassin's Creed, but even then, those are both October and November release titles. So they have a long summer ahead of them. Actually, the entire industry has a very long summer, except for the 3DS, which has, you know, like I said, it has Kingdom Hearts, it has Mario this summer, so it should do well. And Lego games tend to sell better on Nintendo platforms, so Lego Batman might help boost those as well. I think that's it for this week. I guess you folks have any news I missed out on.
No.
Okay. So, you know, as always, you can check us out on iTunes, leave us reviews, smiley faces, comments, and all that other fun stuff. Check us out on Twitter at @do_wielding, Facebook, do wielding as well. You know, we always like new friends and stuff like that, even though their accounts aren't as active. And I want to thank Kevin and Phil for joining us this week.
No problem.
So for Daniel and myself, this has been Dual World in episode 70-something.
73.
I
was going to say 74. I was close. Okay. And Finn. Yay.